From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made tomorrow in schools around the world. Students plan to walk out of class as part of another global climate strike. This follows the coordinated global climate strikes that were held this past September. Tomorrow, some students are going to travel to their state capitals. Others will participate in events in their communities. And all of this coincides with the launch of a new coalition of youth climate activists in Rochester. It's more than just an after-school club or a hobby. They are serious, and this coalition will be called the New York Youth Climate Leaders, or NY2CL. They're aware that mass demonstrations can provide powerful images, but action requires more than just marching. And this hour, a conversation about what striking students want regarding climate action, now and in the future. Our guests this hour include three guests from NY2CL. Radesh Singh is a senior at Brighton High School. Welcome back. Nice to have you.
Thanks for having us.
Also with us is Liam Smith from Brighton. Welcome back to you.
Thanks. Good to be here.
And here with us for the first time is Celia Darling, who's a senior at Webster Thomas. Welcome to you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
All right. So it's NY2CL. If I publish it on the website as NY2CL, it's because I was promised there would be no math. And it's been a long time since I've seen things raised to the second power. NY2CL, we're going to talk about what your mission is, but first of all, let's talk about what's happening tomorrow. And Radesh, as I mentioned, in September, there are these coordinated events. They seem to have struck a chord in a lot of different places, and it sounds like you want to keep the momentum, and students around the world want to keep the momentum going.
Yeah, definitely. So just in Rochester alone, we had 1,000 Rochesterians of all ages strike and demonstrate in downtown Rochester. It was the last largest mass mobilization of Rochesterians in recent history for environmental action. And millions across the world demonstrated as well as part of the global climate strikes from September 20th and 27th. So exactly, we just really want to continue the momentum from those strikes. This past Black Friday, millions more youth and adults of across the world demonstrated again in the first part of the global climate strikes. And December 6th is actually the national strike that's been organized by Sunrise Movement, specifically coordinating efforts in the United States.
You know, so we see headlines, for example, Bernie Sanders is going to be with students who walk out in Iowa tomorrow. There's going to be students in California marching to the state capitol. There's going to be students in different countries doing this. What's happening in your own school? I want to ask you all what you expect to happen tomorrow in your own schools. What's happening in your school, Radesh?
So right after school, we are going to be marching to 12 Corners.
You're attending the whole school day?
And then marching directly after to 12 Corners.
Okay.
So it was hard to get administration on board. So we decided to, right after school, we're going to be marching to 12 Corners and
You don't have to get anybody on board. I just want you to know that.
That's true.
Okay,
that's,
but you're going to do it after school.
But so far, our school administration has actually been very supportive of our efforts.
I do hear that. So. And I joke, and they may be listening now. And in fact, I know you have a very constructive relationship with them.
Yeah, so definitely. So we didn't want to antagonize that at all. But we're going to be marching right after school to the gazebo at 12 Corners. We're going to be meeting up with another about youth from about 10 climate groups across the greater Rochester area. And we're going to be striking, demonstrating, protesting, rallying. So we're really excited for this. And we're hoping to have a couple hundred youth and adults from across the area.
Okay, Liam, what's your expectation for tomorrow?
So I go to school with Radesh, so pretty much the same thing. I'm really excited for it, and I think we'll get a big turnout. I'm really excited for it.
Yeah, and what we saw in September, do you view this as another chance to sort of be visual, to kind of be top of mind? Because we're going to talk this hour about what actual action means beyond this. But what do you think these events can actually do?
So this is where we lay out what we want and make it clear to our government what we want them to do. And so that's what we're really going to do tomorrow. We have some specific policy asks. We'll get there.
Celia, so Webster Thomas, for you, mm-hmm. What's happening in your school tomorrow?
Well, we're just going to bring some people to the protest after school. We like to keep administration happy and not skip school if we can avoid it. So, yeah, we're hoping to have 100, maybe more, but we can fit 100 really well for tomorrow. So.
And what are you hoping comes out of an event like tomorrow?
So we have some really specific acts, one of them being on a county level for Rochester, passing a climate action plan advisory board, which I believe we've been asking for since May. And to really just see a large group of people being like, we would love to have this board in Rochester. So that would be a really good tangible thing
All right,
to see.
So let's talk about some of the policy here. And as we talk about this, we're going to be not just tying it into what's happening tomorrow in schools and in the global climate strikes tomorrow, but also with this new coalition, NY Squared CL, the New York Youth Climate Leaders. Where do you want people to go on, perhaps online or to learn more about what you're doing?
Yeah, so we have an Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. You can follow us at New York Youth Climate Leaders at on Facebook and Instagram. And on Twitter, you can follow us at New York Youth Climate.
And as Celia points out, Radesh, you've got a situation now where at the county level, you're asking for a climate action plan, and you've got a changing administration.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the election's passed, but I will say I remember 4.5 years ago when it was Cheryl DeNolfo's first campaign, and she would not say in the first interview we did whether she actually thought climate change was happening at all.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't mean that she doesn't care about conservation issues, and she said throughout her tenure that she does.
Mm-hmm.
But do you view this differently with the new administration coming in?
Definitely. We're actually quite hopeful that not only our advisory board will get passed, but the recommendations that this board will create will be much more aggressive, and that the county will be able to implement these much more effectively with a changing administration that's definitely been more favorable towards our actions. Adam Bell recently supported our advisory board and our proposal and has reached out to us saying that he wants to get more involved with climate action in the local area. So far, we've had nothing but positive experiences with the incoming administration.
Yeah. Liam, you have been no stranger to challenging authority and power when you think the moment calls for it,
mm-hmm.
whether it's in New York City, at the UN, or elsewhere. Do you see a tangible difference coming in with county administration, and do you trust what you're hearing from the new administration?
Yeah, definitely. We have a very good relationship with Adam Bell and his staff. He endorsed our proposal in August, and he asked me to serve in his transition team infrastructure subcommittee, and so I'll definitely be keeping climate involved in those discussions. And so I think that we definitely have some opportunities to not only go through the legislature to get a climate action plan advisory board, but also to do more environmental work through the Department of Environmental Services.
Tell me a little bit about that. So you are, I assume you're the youngest member on the transition. And again, the transition
By far.
Team. The transition team has a lot of different sort of tentacles throughout the community because it's meant to not only bring a new the actual physical work of changing the administration, but also making sure that when he starts work next month, all the different initiatives he'd like to do have a little bit of momentum and some heft to them. So, again, you're part of what? Is it a subcommittee?
Yeah, and we're just starting the work. I just met with him once, and I have a lot of reading to do.
No, I hear that. I hear that.
Well, Go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask you, first of all, what does it mean to be a senior in high school, and you're asked by the next county executive to be a part? Again, mm-hmm. I understand there's a lot of different big parts and small parts, but you're part of the transition. What does that mean to you?
He just wants to keep our voice involved in what's going on and be involved in the process. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to advocate for renewable infrastructure, and I just hope to help keep climate change involved in what he's doing.
Okay. And ideally then, when he actually takes the job officially, things are a little bit more ready to roll here. I mean, because, mm-hmm. you know, this is sort of an interesting spot where the county budget will have passed. He'll have essentially, you know, 12 months until he's got to put a budget out, but he's got a lot of work to do to try to make sure that the first year isn't just a learning on the job, nothing gets done. Yeah. What do you think can get done in year one? On the county level, you think these things can happen? What can happen? I'm going to ask all three of you. Let's get specific here. What do you think can happen?
Year one? Well, definitely want the advisory board in place. And I want to see Bellow's team working with county legislators to craft a draft climate action plan. And so that's what I see year one, is a draft climate action plan that all the legislature can review and maybe even pass.
Okay. Celia, what do you want to see?
Yeah, I completely agree with Liam on that, to have the board established. And what we really want to emphasize is it's a bipartisan board, and we want to hear voices from both sides trying to create climate action in Monroe County.
You think realistically you're going to see it happen?
Yeah, I am confident, and I would like to be hopeful about that.
Okay, Radesh?
Yeah, if you look at the proposed legislation that Legislator Wilcox submitted, the climate action Plan Advisory Board has 6 months to form its recommendations for this climate action plan. So in 6 months, that board must have something presented to the legislature for further review. So I am very hopeful that not only this advisory board will be created, but the recommendations that they do come up with will be aggressive in order to keep up with the CLCPA that the state passed last year, which already set very ambitious goals. So it's merely a matter of Monroe County basically getting on board with what the state has required. And that helps in the long run in trying to draw in investments and state aid and trying to implement these solutions.
All right. So I also want to try to be as tangible as we can. We think about the ways things can change with county governance, county policy, and then we'll talk about other kind of forms of government and goals legislatively, goals for this new coalition. And listeners, if you want to, by the way, weigh in on the conversation with students, we think it's important to continue to have student voices and youth voices when it comes to climate change, because it is a fact of life that I'm getting older every second of every day, as we all are. But the people who are going to be impacted the most long term are the youngest among us. And I think it's been really instructive to hear their voices, and we will continue to do that. If you have questions for them, if you have ideas or things you want to share, or just kind of questions about what their goals are, 844-295-TALK. They don't have any problem, by the way, if you want to challenge them, too. They're used to that. 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. 263-9994. You can email the program. It's connections@WXXI.org. So if the county creates this advisory board and the county creates its own climate action plan and it is aggressive and serious about this, some people think that, you know, sort of the naysayers think, well, you want to be very draconian and you want to, you know, make sure that everybody lives in tiny houses and drives Flintstone cars, or you want to be much, much more practical and realistic, but strong in action. What does strong, realistic action mean on the county level?
Yeah. So again, sometimes the naysayers, they would like to say, oh, do you want us to go back to the Stone Age? But that's not what we're advocating for whatsoever. We're merely advocating for building efficiencies to increase in terms of reducing a greenhouse gas emissions so that the vitality of our region could continue for the future. So some of the things that we hope to see in our climate action plan, which are outlined on our website, includes transitioning the county's fleet vehicles away from gas to going fully electric, making sure that the county operations themselves, all the buildings that they own and operate, stem from 100% renewable energy, increasing efficiency in terms of recycling and waste management, trying to divert more waste away from landfills. And another thing that we explain on our website is this thing called PACE financing, which the state passed recently, which is basically providing low interest loans to businesses and other organizations to take out in order to invest in efficiency upgrades in their own buildings. So, and there's a variety of other things that we could do, which I'll let Liam and Celia explain as well.
Go ahead, Liam.
So PACE financing is definitely an interesting option. I think the city of Rochester recently enabled it. It's a property assessed clean energy, so basically attaches the loan to the property rather than the corporation or nonprofit. And so the county has to enable that because it's a state program that, you know, I think it's some sort of taxing body has to enable it. So that's one thing. Also, in terms of transportation, county roads and county other transportation that's controlled by the county can definitely be reformed. So more bike lanes, LED lights definitely instead of anything else, and just public transportation if possible. It definitely could be expensive.
All right. Well, yes. And
yes.
Well, we all know that infrastructure investment can be more expensive. I think every time there is a start and then a stop, it's viewed as with some sort of cynicism. So what we saw in California, you know, Governor Newsom in California says, you know, they were temporarily halting rail construction for, you know, for cost reasons, among other things, not shelving it entirely. And what happens? You see all the people who say, well, we can't transition our infrastructure with transportation. It's too expensive. And they sort of declare victory at those moments here. You'd like to at least see it explored. Mm-hmm. What's the idea? I want to know what your generation thinks the ideal forms of or sort of mix of transportation. What should it look like in the future?
Definitely better public transportation that's more available to everybody. Because, at least for me, it's just not practical to use the buses here. Because
the way the routes are constructed?
Yeah, well, just and how frequently they come. They don't come very often where I live. And so that and or electric cars.
More charging stations?
Yeah, more charging stations and just more electric cars in general, which is not necessarily a government issue to get people to buy electric cars.
It's an interesting sort of mix between market and government, right?
Yeah.
Where there may be incentives, et cetera. Yeah. But Celia, for you, what does transportation look like in the future if we're doing it right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's definitely important to remember where people are located. If you're in a city, it's easy to have public transportation, even if it's not the best. But for people in more rural areas that have to go longer distances, definitely electric. And waiting for electric to go like longer and longer distances is really what we need to focus on.
If people in your generation are fortunate enough to be in a position sometime in their early adulthood when they're going to have to buy a car, are you already thinking, probably shouldn't be doing gas models, they're going to be gone at some point, or things are changing? Or is it too early and people aren't really thinking about that?
That's an interesting question. I think it's kind of early to tell. It completely depends. And it's challenging because it's slightly more expensive now. It's not always subsidized.
Up front, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
But not everybody has the means to do that. And I think what we need to do with it'll eventually get to the point where the more environmentally friendly choice is cheaper, but right now we have to just make it better so everybody, no matter your means, can make a smarter choice.
Yeah, I think that's well said. What do you think, Radesh?
It's funny, actually. I had a conversation with our school librarian, Mr. Ennis. We've actually had a really good relationship with him. He always asks us about the activities we're doing with Brighton High School Climate Club. So recently, over the summer, he was in for a new car, and he remembered some of our talks we gave about beneficial electrification, especially with electric cars. And he made it a point to go electric for his next model. And he came to talk to us saying, thank you, guys. You kind of pushed me to going electric. And for me, if I would get a car, I would 100% get electric regardless of the upfront cost, because I know in the long run, the cost will go down both in carbon emissions and in economic costs with buying gas. I definitely see people going electric and seeing the benefits of it, and I think the rest of our generation sees that as well. It's just, again, the upfront costs of buying the electric vehicle initially.
Well, I think Celia makes a good point that extends to just about all forms of new and evolving technology, which is it always starts out really expensive, and as it becomes more common, it becomes more accessible. And then the question becomes, how do you get there, and what's government's role? Before we continue with the youth climate leaders, let me grab Jane in Rochester on the phone. Hi, Jane.
Hi, Evan. I'm trying to be real positive here. We've tried so much to influence the governing bodies, the political corporate apparatus that we have, and it seems that for all intents and purposes, they don't get it, and that it's a crisis, and to me, it's just become the number one issue. And yet, as people campaign and so forth, I don't hear that. As much as I like to hear it. So I was wondering if once you go to the politicos and you don't succeed as you would want to, what sort of backup plan could you have? I know some people have pointed out that some of the most critical movements and important movements in the country came from the bottom up simply because the political, they would not move or move fast enough. So I just wondered that, and I wish you the very best of luck, and I'd like to know from my own county, but they don't seem to move on it, what an individual can do, but a backup plan if they're unresponsive. Thank you very much, Evan.
Jane, thank you, and as always, incisive and a great question. So I'm going to cover Jane's ground, and Jane, hang in there, but I think I want to start by asking students to grade the current county administration. They've had 4 years. How have they done on climate action? Radesh?
That's putting me on the spot here. I would say, like, again, I haven't been as active and attentive to what the county is doing for the first 2 years of the administration, but my experience for the past couple of years, I'd say probably a C minus or so.
Okay.
Liam? This is out of 10.
What?
This is out of 10, or is it ABCD?
ABCD, yeah.
Yeah, I'd give them a C. They have installed some solar fields and created some...
On the county level?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. They have some solar fields, some LEED certified buildings. I think they have 8 or so.
Yeah, I think most of them are concentrated in MCC,
They harvest some methane from landfills. So it's not like they're doing nothing, but there's a lot of opportunity to do more.
Okay.
Absolutely. I'll go with a C. I think people could definitely be more excited about it and planning towards the future and moving just faster in general.
Now, Jane's concern is that as ambitious as you all are in your goals, your elected leaders are not going to match your energy and your urgency, or sometimes will be outright obstinate. Mm-hmm. So do you expect that? What do you do about it? Let's go around the table. Ridesh.
Well, I think Jane mentioned, like, if you go one time and they reject you, what do you do? I go back. I go back again and again and again and again. And it might take a while, but we continue to go back. We speak at every county legislature meeting since May. We're persistent. We stay persistent. So it's really pivotal to just keep maintaining that energy, even when you do hit obstacles and roadblocks, and outreaching to allies in order to expand your movement, you know, so that you can have more people voicing their opinions in order to create more political will in order to get these solutions passed.
Liam?
So I am somewhat optimistic today. I think at least in the county level, I expect to make some progress, at least through the Bellow administration, through the executive branch. And I'm optimistic that we might have a little more. I think it might be possible to get the advisory board through because the Democrats have a few more seats, and I think we might be able to convince a couple of Republicans. I'm pretty optimistic about that. But if we fail, we'll continue doing what we are doing, show up to more legislature meetings, and we'll show up in the streets like we're doing this Friday.
Okay, Celia?
Yeah, I would definitely focus on the idea of networking and being extremely persistent. Because if you're being extremely annoying to this person and you can get your friend to be extremely annoying, that's like two people. And then you get like three and it just adds and adds and snowballs. And I think that's really, really powerful and we can't take that for granted.
The power of persistence, even annoyingness. But then Jane's other comment is if you cannot find success at the policy level, what can individuals do? And, you know, we kind of revisit that question every so often because it's an ongoing societal question, and it will be for as long as we have a civilization. But for now, on that individual level, what would you say to Jane, Celia?
Well, I think it's very interesting because it was definitely an idea of, like, the 90s and the early 2000s that, like, it is your personal responsibility to deal with climate change in this crisis. They probably called it global warming.
It was
back then.
Very clever move by, like, big money and, you know, sort of big government. That, hey, you guys, you figure this out. Anyway,
exactly.
I don't mean to be cynical, but it kind of was.
Completely, I agree with you.
Yeah.
And I don't want to discredit individual action because individual action is ridiculously important to act. To get a world you want to see. However, we really have to focus on getting government officials to support this because mm-hmm. we have to do bigger and bigger things, and you can't always achieve that at the individual level.
Okay, Liam?
I agree with what Celia said. I'd say turn off the lights, take shorter showers, and compost. Those are the easiest three things to do. If you are able to, then purchase renewable energy or... buy an electric car.
Radesh.
Yeah, I agree with what both of these guys said. And just adding to Celia's point, RPCC, which is the premier climate action organization in the area with 70 member coalitions, they are advocating for systems level changes. So again, although individual action is really important, we need to have our systems change it and action at every level of government in order to truly combat this crisis. At individual level, again, beneficial electrification, so transitioning any of your appliances away from gas to electric, because again, the greater Rochester area actually has about 89% to 91% of its electric grid coming from renewable source, from non-fossil fuel sources, namely nuclear and hydroelectric. So being able to transition away any appliances from gas to electricity is quite a huge thing if you're able to afford in order to reduce your carbon footprint.
I had a friend a few years ago who was dying, and she was in her late 70s. Irish-American. So they had an Irish wake for her. She said, I want to know what you all say about me before I'm gone. And it was a great party. And she was an amazing woman. And we miss you, Maureen. She was awesome. I wonder if we should have an Irish wake for like fossil fuels in the 20s. Because the 20s are going to be here in the, just the next few weeks, right? And throughout the decade of the 20s, it's supposed to be the last decade of really consistent fossil fuel usage. We can maybe like have an Irish wake and, you know, all drive gasoline cars and then sort of like say goodbye and say, you know, it was a nice run. I joke about this, an Irish wake for fossil fuels in the 20s, but here's the serious question. You're talking about systemic change. You're talking about individuals, great, but you need to get government on board. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if you're about to have a harder time with Democrats than Republicans, and here's why I ask, not to make this partisan, but Republicans tend to be a little bit more direct in their opposition. Democrats sort of can say the right things, but actual systemic change is really hard. And moving them to the kind of action that would give us a chance to actually have an Irish wake for fossil fuels is pretty far away right now. How do you view that dynamic, Radesh?
Yeah, definitely. Historically, especially in terms of climate action, both parties have kind of been lagging on taking making systems level changes in, especially at the national level. So again, as youth activists and the climate movement, we just have to continue pushing our elected officials, both Democrat and Republican, to supporting systems level changes, going 100% renewable energy, transitioning away from fossil fuels, and stop propping up the fossil fuel industry. It will really take a lot of political will that we're supplying and we're seeing supplied by youth across the world in order to get our elected officials on board.
Okay. How do you feel about that dynamic in politics, Liam?
It's tricky. And it's sad that that even Democrats won't always motivate on this issue, but I mean that's why we're doing what we're doing. We're not just trying to motivate the Republicans to do stuff. We're not just trying to get Democrats in office. We're trying to get everybody to act on climate change. And so,
do you think one of the open doors is the emerging evidence that this is an economic winner? That this is not an economic sort of doomsday? That there is innovation and money to be made, and even in our capitalistic society, this kind of transition doesn't have to be a crippling one for a society, for a nation that is competitive with other nations. Do you think that will help in the political sphere?
I mean, personally, that drives me, and I know it drives some people. Especially with carbon fiend dividend, there have been a lot of economists who have endorsed carbon fiend dividend. Including, I think, all of the living former chairs of the Federal Reserve.
It passed last month, and it's now enacted into law, right?
Carbon fiend dividend? No.
I know, that's the point. You've got all this expertise behind it.
Yeah.
And here we are, still talking about it.
Yeah.
Even with economists saying, it's a good thing.
And I don't know, it's hard to explain why. Is it the oil money in politics? I don't know.
Okay.
But it's pretty clear that we need to address climate change and that we can do it in a way that will benefit our economy.
Celia, do you worry about sort of the dynamics of politics?
So I think it's interesting because it's almost generational. It's very hard to find somebody, I would say, under the age of 20 that doesn't believe we should be doing something about climate change.
No matter their politics.
Yeah, no matter their politics. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I definitely think most of our elected officials are over the age of 20. And because of that, they're going to have slightly different opinions. So unfortunately, some of it might be a time game of getting slightly younger people into politics and making change, which is interesting. I don't know.
Yeah, some are over the age of 120, which has made it harder. You know, I mean, I we can joke, but yes, I understand that point. The average age of a member of Congress and member of the U.S. Senate is something like several decades older than the average American. And that's probably impacting the view on climate. It's probably inevitable. I want to take Dan and Betsy on the phone in just a moment. Let's get our only break of the hour. And when we come back with Celia Darling, Liam Smith, Radesh Singh, we're going to continue your feedback. We got some emails for the students. They are going to be part of worldwide climate strikes and demonstrations tomorrow. Some students walking out of school, some very dutifully waiting till the end of the last bell and then marching out in various places. But they all want to be part of what has become a worldwide movement of climate strikes. So you'll see it in California and Iowa and New York and Spain and everywhere else tomorrow, just as you did all throughout September. But these students are also part of a brand new coalition that they're calling New York Youth Climate Leaders. NY Squared CL just launched, and they're talking about their agenda and goals. Your feedback for them is next. Coming up in our second hour, the life and legacy of Edie Windsor. If that is not a name you recognize immediately, you probably should. Edie Windsor is an LGBTQ pioneer. She passed away recently, but Windsor was the name that took it all the way to the Supreme Court and had the law changed regarding same-sex couples, their legal rights and protections. And we're going to talk to her widow next hour. This is Connections, and now your feedback. Betsy in Brighton. Go ahead, Betsy.
Hi. I wanted to comment that I'm well past my 20s, but I have children in my 20s, and I am very much in favor of doing everything possible to go green. I just bought another plug-in Prius as I gave my former one to my daughter who moved to California. But one of my comments was, is I think that the government doesn't do enough work educating the public. So the city and the state put in charging ports at local libraries and garages, but they did very little, if anything, to educate the public on how to use them or even that they were free to use. So I think that there's a lot that we could do to educate the public. And I agree with that young lady that there is a generational issue where people are afraid of new technologies and young people are early adopters. And I think there's a lot more we can do for outreach to calm people down as if, you know, in that stereotype that we're not going back to the Stone Age. We are moving forward to the space age. So I'm all for them, and I'll see them at 12 Corners.
Betsy, thank you for the phone call. Students, you want to respond to that, especially the idea of kind of working with all generations to make sure people see that new technology can be integrated without mass disruption? Yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. By saying that I thought most people under 20 will always agree with climate policy, by no means am I saying anyone above doesn't necessarily agree with that at all. But I love going to protests and seeing like grandmas out there with signs that have like their grandkids on them and like striking for your grandkids. And I definitely think in the climate movement, you see a lot of younger people and you see a lot of older people, because those are people that don't necessarily have as many responsibilities as other people. They don't necessarily, they're retired or they're in school, so they're not necessarily working. So those people have the time, but we love striking with people of all different generations working on the movement.
Yeah, and I think there's something precarious, Liam, if this became a generational split, because you're gonna, you're not probably going to be able to accomplish your goals if it becomes this sort of bifurcated situation.
Exactly, because we have to work with a lot of politicians who are not, well, who are of age, and we are not.
That's fair enough. Do you see a generational split that concerns you at all, Radesh?
No, actually, the intergenerational aspect of climate change and how, like, even though the effects will disproportionately affect my generation, the generations to come, we are already seeing the effects right now across the world. I'm not going to go into the science behind it, because obviously the science is crystal clear, and it really gives me a pleasure to see boomers coming to our strikes. So when they say like, okay boomer, I'm like, yes boomer, thank you boomer.
No, you just put an exclamation mark. Okay boomer,
yes.
There you go. So when I asked Radesh, you know, if he's worried about a generational split, knowing him as I do, I knew he would say no. He's the most relentlessly optimistic person I know.
And snaps for that.
I was going to close with it before I get back to your phone call. So if you're on the phone, hang there. But I think this is an important moment here because, you know, when you said, no, I'm not worried about that, close listeners of Connections will recognize that I will use the moniker Senator when I think someone is dodging a question. So I was ready to say, Senator Singh, are you sure that there's nothing to be concerned about with the generations? I don't think you're dodging, though. I think that your enthusiasm and your optimism is genuine. That's my take. Mm-hmm. But I am curious to know, for you, what does worry you when you have sort of dark moments? Mm-hmm. What's bringing you down the most consistently about this?
That's actually a really good question, because I've been, over Thanksgiving, that question actually really, I was really reflecting on that, spending time with family and seeing like, what's the world going to look like in 10, 15 years if we don't adequately combat this crisis? And what's really worrying to me is apathy among certain segments of the population and apathy among certain politicians who don't understand how pertinent this crisis is to the world. And our goal as youth activists is to transition that apathy away into action and positive change in order to induce systems-level changes that we've been talking about in order to truly combat this crisis. So I think the thing that really worries about me is the apathy that many people share.
And Liam and Celia, I'd like you to kind of pick up the thread there and ask you if you are confident that you will be able to avoid cynicism that could come with repeated failure to get policy passed, to get politicians on board. Years of slow progress could sap anyone's enthusiasm. Are you steeled for that sort of a fight, Liam?
I'm steeled for that sort of a fight, but that does not necessarily mean that I'm not cynical.
Already a little?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
I always say that there's a difference between cynicism and realism.
Yeah, yeah.
Cynicism is when you're sort of relentlessly negative in a knee-jerk fashion. Realism is when you see the world for what it is and you can't help but sort of succumb to maybe some negativity based on actual results, etc. So the cynicism means sort of preemptive negativity. Can you avoid that?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I consider realism to be a really important virtue. But what does worry me is excessive partisanship just for the sake of partisanship. Mm-hmm. And so what I would say is that's one thing I might be cynical about.
Yeah,
is that sometimes people are partisan just so they have a good wedge issue.
Listen, I understand why you would be cynical, but I would also understand why you would be realistic. There are times where it is crass the way winning political points comes at the expense of just about everything. So I share that concern. Celia, what about you?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I'd love to go off of Radesh was talking about apathy. I'm not afraid of climate deniers. They don't scare me. They're not a big enough population to like bring us down. But it is frightening sometimes the people in the middle who believe it but don't want to do anything about it. And even if those people just want to attend a protest, sign a petition, write their congressperson, if we got the people in the middle mobilized, we could be doing so, so much more, so much faster. And I'm very positive that more and more people are constantly joining the movement and wanting to do more.
But are you worried that in 5 years, if not much has changed, you're going to have a very different sort of personality and outlook?
No, because I think we get so much energy from seeing other people in this movement, and you just kind of like snowball, and like that brings me joy and hope, just seeing people out there doing things like this, that people want to hear about this and talk about it.
Well, as we go back to the phones, if you know students in particular who would like to get involved, can people get involved with this new coalition?
Yes. So you can check out our website, which will be linked to on WXXI, New York Youth Climate Leaders. You can also follow us on Instagram, New York Youth Climate Leaders, or NY Youth Climate Leaders. If you're a Rochester area student, you can also join the Rochester Youth Climate Leaders at rycl.org. That website, again, is rycl.org.
Okay. So if you want to get involved or know someone who wants to get involved, there are all kinds of opportunities to do that. Back to the phones we go. And Dan in Brighton next. Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, I just can't say enough how impressed I am with the young people organizing this. Earlier on, they said that there'd be 10 groups there. One of the groups that's linked up with the organizers is Extinction Rebellion, and they're going to be there tomorrow. And the first call you took was about more direct action. And I have a call to action for her on December 8th from 5 to 7 at the Rochester Zen Center. Extinction Rebellion is doing a talk on how to get involved with direct action, and we'll be at the climate strike tomorrow. And so we hope to see her there at both events.
What time on the 8th?
That's 5 to 7 p.m. at the Carriage House, Rochester Zen Center, 5 Arnold Park, Rochester, New York, 14607.
All right, Dan, thanks very much for that. We're seeing a pile of emails from folks who are just sort of excited to hear a growing group of students involved and taking action. I'm sure you hear that all the time, Radesh.
Yeah, and it's kind of nice because Liam brought me into the local climate movement when I was a freshman, and probably one of the best things that's ever happened to me in my high school career. So thank you for that, Liam. But just seeing how RYCL has grown and how our local climate movement has grown from just two schools being represented in RYCL to over a dozen schools now being represented in our group, and now 23 youth organizations across the state being part of the New York Youth Climate Leaders. It's really inspiring that we're able to amass and mobilize such a large swath of youth across the state and in Rochester to care about this issue. It's really inspiring, and it really gives me joy and optimism for the future.
So. All right. Let me get Don in Rochester. Go ahead, Don.
They had to say, okay, boomer. I am not that old, but I am officially the last generation that can claim if they so choose to be a boomer. I don't really consider myself a boomer, but there's a couple of alarming things that I heard that I have to point out. Number one, first and foremost, is nuclear power, not green, not green at all. In fact, super dangerous. We should all be terrified of all the nuclear power plants that are still generating power because they're 40, 50 years overdue from being filled with concrete. That's how you decommission a power plant. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, you know, it's great that young people are, you know, being involved and taking ownership, but let's not get arrogant. Don't forget, the boomers are the ones that started the protest that you're now continuing. You know, we protested all over this country for years and years about nuclear power, about, you know, the federal government selling logging rights, you know.
Pollution?
I personally told James Watt to his face in North Carolina that he was evil and he deserved to burn in one of the forest fires that he was undoubtedly going to cause by allowing the national forest to be logged. So those are the two things. You know, mostly I'd like to get some kind of a response on the greenness of nuclear power, because it's great to talk about eliminating fossil fuels, but right now we have no plan, you know, just to, I mean, how are we going to fly? You're going to give up flying? And nuclear power is not the answer. Right now, that's the only solution. That's not a solution. There are concrete casks, I can guarantee you, at every nuclear power plant in this country, sitting in the parking lot, because we have nowhere to put even low-level nuclear waste.
Yeah,
you know, West Valley never cleaned up. The plan to store it, you know, in Yucca Mountain, not a good plan. You know, we don't have a solution for nuclear power.
Okay.
So
Don,
those are my comments.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for the phone call. Let me actually, a lot there, hit a couple of things. As someone who's from Cleveland, where around the time of my birth, the river caught fire, Don is correct to point out that river may still be burning if not for the activism and work of previous generations. And we appreciate that. And my guess is the students at this table recognize that and appreciate that.
And it was also okay, well, boomer, with an exclamation point, thanking them for their prior activism. For without the boomers, the modern environmental movement would have never taken off and we wouldn't be here sitting today. So thank you, boomers, for starting this movement. And we want to take the torch from you and continue it.
He's saying that unironically, by the way.
Yeah, unironically.
Now, on the subject of nuclear, I'll let the students jump in here. I will say, Don, that, and by the way, I'm not sure I understand how fervently you believe in your cause. Telling people they deserve to burn in a forest fire seems a little over the top to me, but let's set that aside for a moment. On the subject of nuclear power, there are some very, very interesting climate writers today. Leah Stokes is one of them, but there's many who have tried to analyze the data, and their view is, and this is a subset, not everyone, but their view is that you cannot go where we need to go without nuclear and that it has to be part of it. I'm not at all an expert here. What I don't know that I agree with Don, and I'll ask all of you about this, is when he says there's no plan. How are you going to air travel? I mean, I don't hear you saying we should never burn any fossil fuels ever again. I do hear you saying we have to get away from fossil fuels as being the primary form of energy consumption worldwide. And have a much more diverse menu of options that don't do the damage that fossil fuel burning does. But how do you see it? Celia, Radesh, Liam?
So, yeah, I agree. The most severe challenge here is primarily just transitioning off of fossil fuels. And so it's hard to get the storage right for the grid, right? So unless you have something constantly running, like nuclear, then your grid becomes dependent on, you know, how bright is the sun shining, like how cloudy is it or how windy is it. So it may be important to have the nuclear as a backup.
As a component?
Like the backbone of the grid in case you need to draw on it.
What about air travel?
Oh, that's a good question.
It's a fair question, isn't it?
Yeah.
I guess we could all be Greta Thunberg and just take carbon-free sailboats all the time.
But you know what she said this week that I thought was so interesting? Because Greta, once again, you know, docked her boat somewhere. I forget where she is this week.
Lisbon.
She made a really interesting comment. She said a lot of people talk about the boat, the way she's traveling.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I don't do it to show people how I think they should do it. Yeah. I do it to show how inefficient it is and how we have to change to make actual travel, living, et cetera, much more efficient than this. Because for now, that's the point, the way she's going to make the point. She doesn't say, hey, everybody, take this sailboat if you want to go to Lisbon.
Yeah, exactly.
She's saying, look how hard this is.
Yeah.
We've got to do this a different way. And I thought that point was really compelling.
Mm-hmm.
I found that very compelling. But on that point, I mean, we're going to have to think about things like air travel in the future.
Currently, you can buy carbon offsets if you're flying somewhere, if you have the means to buy carbon offsets to plant trees in place of flying, because flying is really, really destructive to the environment.
It's a tough one.
Yeah.
That's fair, Don. But last, real briefly, do you agree with him when he says there's no plan to get off fossil fuels?
I would disagree with that. I think there is a plan, and countries have made huge, tremendous strides in transitioning their electric grids away from fossil fuels. Costa Rica is actually a great example of that. They have a very aggressive climate action plan. And I believe recently they went about 100 days with their electric grid having no fossil fuels inputted into the electric grid. So they're doing a lot of great stuff with transitioning away from fossil fuels. So there's definitely plans that are available. There are models across the world that we can follow. So I would really disagree with that there's no plan.
By the way, Don followed up to say that his response to OK Boomer, you ready for this?
Yes.
OK Gamer. A lot of dead air there. Justin Wilcox from the Monroe County Legislature is on the line with us. Hello there, Mr. Legislator.
How you doing, Mr. Dawson?
Very good. Go ahead.
Hey, I just wanted to give a shout out to Radesh Shili and Liam for the great job that they did and the leadership they provided on this issue in the county legislature. If it wasn't for them and the way that they advocated, we wouldn't be talking about having a climate action plan in Monroe County.
Hmm.
So, they have been truly, I mean, inspirational. People could learn a lot about how to advocate successfully just by paying attention to these young leaders, because what they did is they showed up for almost a year at every LEDGE meeting and advocated for this change. And they met with legislators and they met with them and they spoke intelligently and thoughtfully about the issues, even if they disagreed. So again, I just want to give a shout out and congratulate them on their efforts.
Let's be in touch in the new year, because I know a lot is changing at the county level, Justin, and we're going to see a lot of movement on these kinds of issues in the next 12 months, and I look forward to that conversation.
Well, and again, I don't think it would have happened, and I don't think we'd be talking about it if it wasn't for their efforts. Again, hats off to them, and thank you for your advocacy. It's appreciated.
Yeah, Justin Wilcox from the Monroe County Legislature. Powerful words there, but as we get ready to wrap the program, just to be fair, a little pushback. A listener named Alex says, the mindset he's hearing from the students is, if you don't agree with me, you just don't understand the problem, and he thinks that's an immature attitude. Okay. Radesh?
I don't know how to... That's... It's funny, because I actually had a conversation with a student previously talking about climate change, and she agreed with the issue that climate change is real, but she didn't see that it was such a big problem. But the thing is, the issues of climate change and this crisis have been completely understated for the past many decades. The science is crystal clear. So not being on the side of change and not being on the side of mitigating the effects of climate change is quite dangerous to our future and the future of our nation as a whole.
Okay, Liam?
If you don't think climate change is happening, then you don't understand the problem. But if you simply disagree with how we need to solve it, that's a productive conversation. That's a conversation we need to have, is what policies do we need?
So you welcome that.
Yeah, and there are many different ideas out there.
Okay, you agree with that, Celia?
Completely. I definitely believe that it's such a time-sensitive issue that we definitely need to have a conversation about how to deal with the issue, but we need to end the conversation about if it is an issue.
Fair enough. CT asks, by the way, via email, have you thought about combining your protest marches with voter registration? No?
Actually, we're in the works of working with some students from Students Demand Action to actually create a voter registration drive in sometime in January. So that is in the works. But
not for tomorrow.
Not for tomorrow, unfortunately.
All right. Fair question, CT. Thank you. Once again, this new coalition that this group, among other students, are forming is the New York Youth Climate Leaders, or NY Squared CL. Online one more time, Radesh Singh.
Thank you so much.
Online.
Oh,
where?
Sorry. Yeah, sorry. Oh, my God. So Instagram, it's at NY Youth Climate Leaders, yep. Facebook at NY Youth Climate Leaders, on Twitter, New York Climate.
All right. And, you know, you're going to see students around the world protesting tomorrow as one of a series of events, but there's going to be a lot more. So to all three of you, Happy New Year. It's going to be a lot of work. Thanks for coming in, and let's continue the conversations.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Youth Climate Leaders, Radesh Singh, Liam Smith, Celia Darling, joining us this hour. More connections coming up.